Recording in progress. Okay, it's Tuesday, March 24th, 2026. And I did miss last week, so have not been a lot of these that I've missed over the last 6 years, but that was necessary. So I am back, and we will begin with a 20-minute period of meditation, which will be somewhat guided and somewhat not guided, somewhat quiet, such as that is. So just settling into your meditation posture. Hope everyone can hear me okay. I'm not speaking loud, and I do, but I do have a good microphone. So as you settle the body, just you can close your eyes or just lower your gaze. Really an opportunity to not be staring at a screen, even though we're doing this over screens. And turning the attention inward to the sensations and energies in the body, the feeling state or states, the mental states, mind states. Now, this is just the idea of checking in with yourself. How are you doing right now? We can't expect ourselves to just immediately go from our ordinary activities into some, transcendent meditative state. So I think it's helpful to just acknowledge where we're starting from. And we then start to pay attention to the breath. And that doesn't mean we stop being aware of the broader experiences, mind states, feelings, sensations. The breath becomes a focal point, something to ground us, help us to be present. And also act as a balancing process. Helps with the balancing the energy in the body and emotional energy. As you attune to the breath, you can see how it helps calm the mind, calm the heart. Soften. And when the mind wanders, when we notice that the attention has drifted from the breath and from the present moment experience, we gently return. That gentleness is very important. The wandering mind isn't a sign of failure, shortcoming, but the natural result of the training, conditioning to think, to spend our time thinking. So when that happens in meditation, it's a just a normal expression of the human experience. Can be helpful, can be helpful to just notice that transition between thinking and returning. In there, there's a great deal of fodder. What God Ram Dass called grist for the mill. We notice the mind has wandered and check in with ourselves. We might feel the pull to think or the agitation that's triggering thoughts. Might feel some emotion that's been set off by thinking, or that was actually the cause of the thinking. Oh, it can be valuable just to look at, become aware of that space when we realize the mind has wandered. And this doesn't mean we're analyzing ourselves or really thinking about all this, rather just sensing our thoughts put us in this almost dissociative place where we don't connect with the body or feeling realm. So when we stop for a moment, all of that can come forward. Here's where, again, the breath becomes our partner in this process. That as we see that background energies, feelings and sensations, just in that moment we breathe with all that. Open the heart, open the chest, soften the belly. Have a sense of releasing. Is it not rejecting or pushing away? Just giving the space for these energies to move as they must. They may not move as quickly as we'd like, so that might mean we take some time to breathe with feeling, breathe with mind states. And then increasingly we can turn toward the breath, just the breath itself. We arouse interest in the sensations of breathing, the movements of breathing, the flow of breathing. Great, great, great. Before we get on with the so-called teaching, I'll just mention that got a retreat coming up with Paula Snow, who is here. Hello, Paula. There she is. And it's kind of a cool place, Shelterwood. I think I have a link here. It is in April, so just a few weeks away, 22nd to the 26th. Let me see. I have the thing there somewhere. Finding all the tabs I have open. Looks like I don't have it open. Anyway, if you have it handy, Paula, maybe you could slip it in the chat for people. It's going to
I
be,
have it. I have it too.
oh, you do? Okay. It's going to be, the kind of standard Kevin retreat, with some mindful dialogue and meetings, but mostly silent practice. And it's just an interesting setting, kind of a very beautiful natural area. Actually used to be a camp for the California Conservancy. What are they called? The CCC, anyway. The people that were like fire, watch out for the fires and stuff out in Casadero. And there'll be sort of camping and dorms. And I think there might be some private rooms for people, but more of a, rustic. Anyway, hope people who are interested in a retreat and can make it will come. Other than that, I've been kind of keeping a slightly lower activity, which is pleasant and dangerous. Teaching Dharma is one of the things that generally keeps me sane. I don't like to claim any particular sanity. My mental health, is questionable at most times. Actually, someone asked, I was teaching a course for, I don't know if anybody's here from the course that Vimala Sarar and I were doing for the Barry Center. It was a Zoom course on the last 4 Mondays, and at the end we kind of opened it up. Are there any sort of final questions? And somebody was asking about how we practice or what we draw on to take care of ourselves and our practice. And people were kind of talking about, doing metta practice and sort of contemplative things or gratitude and wonderful things. And I was like, well, I just mostly meditate to try to stay sane, and so I sit with my feelings and try to hold my feelings with the how can I put it? Give space for my feelings, experience them, allow them, try to interrupt the relationship between feelings and thinking, just to be just with feelings so that it doesn't spin out into what we call papancha. Great, great Pali word, papancha, PAPANCA. The C in Pali is pronounced like a CH, papancha. It means proliferation. It's such a familiar state that when you learn the word, and it's a good one to kind of have in your in your Pali pocket. Wait a minute, isn't that some kind of a kid's game, Pali Pocket? Anyway, I was taking a hike the other day with Walt Opie, and we started talking about Papantia. And we were talking about the onomatopoeia of Pali, the Pali language. So Pali is the language of the early Buddhist scriptures, Pali. And again, kind of, it's kind of funny to me that, you have Pali and you have Dana and all these, thing, Pali terms that are English women's names. Anyway, whew. Did I warn you that this might be a little bit weird today? I don't know if I mentioned that. Anyway, but Papantia, it's so both the sound of the word and the meaning of it is just so, for anybody who's meditated any significant amount, it just captures something, proliferation of thoughts, the way that thoughts like blossom and bloom, think of one of those like time, what are they called? Time release, not time release, that's drugs. Time, films, where they show things happening really fast, right? And you see plants growing up. So Papancha is kind of like that. It just like keeps blooming out of your head. We were talking about something else that I thought was interesting. Walt was talking about having this experience on retreat, and this is something that we don't talk about a lot as teachers, and I realized I haven't really written about it, so I started writing about it yesterday or sometime. That when you're deep in meditation, this doesn't typically happen in a, sort of daily practice where you're just trying to get, calm down or whatever a little bit. But when the concentration gets strong, usually takes probably a couple of weeks typically. It can be a little less than that, but when things get much quieter, there can be these moments when you know what you are about to think before it manifests as what we ordinarily call thought. And this experience is something I've reflected on, and I have my own sense of what it is and how it works. But the it's a very striking experience because what we typically define as thoughts, and I've heard Dharma teachers use this definition, so it's not just my idea, is words and images that appear in the mind. And so I think that's a reasonable definition of thoughts in the ordinary usage of the word and our ordinary experience of thinking. But when you have this experience where you're sitting and something non-verbalized is known and then transits into a verbal idea, you realize that thoughts are not actually words in the mind. And so or potentially, let's just say, I'll try not to make this definitive because this is, completely based on my own experience and doesn't have any, background in traditional Dharma, any teachings I've ever heard. Well, maybe I've probably heard something. Anyway, what occurred to me when I started to reflect on this is that human beings had thoughts before they had language. Language is something that evolved. We know that, and we know that, it's very conditioned. That is, there isn't one language. There wasn't one human language, right? All these different societies developed different sounds. I would just call them sounds. other ways of calling describing, but for this purposes, sounds is good enough. Sounds that we give meaning to, but the idea that let's take the contrasting idea here that if thoughts and language manifested at the same time in an evolutionary sense, then that would be a pretty amazing coincidence in a way. But I think it's pretty clear that language evolved as a way for us to communicate things that we were thinking, but that didn't have words or images associated with them. So it calls into question the whole idea of what thoughts are. And it's quite striking when one has that experience. And it's like realizing that it's touching into, I think, a different part of the brain, essentially, right? Of our mental capacity that we aren't ordinarily aware of, but we get glimpses of it and we get senses of it. And I think one place that we can sort of make, this isn't quite the same thing, but before we speak, we know what we're going to say. And we do this, I encourage people to notice this when we do mindful speaking exercises. Notice what you're about to say, and then do a quick edit to make sure that what you're saying is wholesome and true and accurate. So we start to see that the mind works, in this incredibly fast way, but that there's this knowing that happens that is beyond words. And we could say certainly that the arts are expressions of this. Music is a great example of this. Music has no meaning, right? It's just sounds. But it comes out of something, out of some longing, something non-verbalized, non-intellectual, non-conscious, really. And we hear it and we feel meaning to it, and then we start to talk about it, right? But those words we know are not the they're not really the they're not the music, and they're never naming the music really accurately. They're just an attempt. So what's the value of this, and where does this have a place in Dharma practice? Because I think it's interesting and sort of a theoretical thing, and we can talk about, there's lots of things you could talk about it that would be, make for interesting conversations that we would have with words. But I think in terms of Dharma practice, what's important about this is seeing that there is actually intentionality in thought. One of the key phrases from the Buddha, and I don't know how often this shows up in the suttas. I know that I only really know of one sutta where he says this, where he says that karma is intention. And it's this very odd phrase. Like, and the word karma in Pali means action. But he doesn't mean action. What he's really talking about, as I understand it, that the results of your actions are determined by the intention behind the actions. And so intention becomes the most important mental factor in determining how our lives unfold. And most of the time, we are not aware of intention. Even in ordinary activities, we just do things. And so one of the critical things that the Dharma practice is meant to help you with is that you become more conscious of intention and that you have those instants before actions where you are aware of the intention and you keep it wholesome. So that's one thing with action, which is pretty easy to understand, certainly, and to imagine. It's not easy to do, but it's doable, in our with our ordinary consciousness. It just requires a little bit more effort to slow down, and it's one of the reasons we have precepts and things like commitments to sobriety, because when we have red lines and we have boundaries around action, then we just automatically don't do a lot of unwholesome things. That's just like no-nos. And it's one of the really important things about taking precepts, that we don't just like, flit around and do whatever we want. But there are many, many actions that fall within the precepts that are not breaking precepts that are nonetheless not wholesome or not really beneficial. So it takes a lot of strength of commitment, and I would say intentionality, to stay present enough to avoid doing unwholesome things. And none of us are capable, at least I don't think any of us are capable of doing that 100%. Perhaps an enlightened being, whatever that is, can do that. But we have to certainly accept that we're going to make mistakes and be human, all that. But coming back to this question of thought, we can see that this kind of raises the stakes even further, because thoughts create karma. Thoughts are a form of karma. They are, in Buddhist terms, they are a form of action. The Buddha defines three forms of action: thoughts, words, and deeds. And so it's thoughts aren't as sort of neutral and lacking of impact that we might think. It's like, oh, well, I was just thinking that, but I didn't do anything. But in terms of Buddhism, the understanding is that when we have these thoughts, they condition speech, they condition action, they lead to other things. So we have to, be careful of thoughts. This is, right there in the texts. So if you realize that, but ordinarily we think of ourselves, typically I would say, well, we're powerless over our thoughts, that they just arise, right? And most of the time, our awareness of them is like, oh, I'm having this thought. And sometimes you'll have a thought that you don't like, right? Or that you wish you weren't having. In fact, probably very common. Oh, God, why am I thinking that? I have to stop thinking that. But then to realize that actually these things manifest before they're showing up in this particular verbalized form, they're actually showing up in this subconscious, I'll call it, pre-verbal form, and that if there is enough strength of concentration, essentially, it is possible to intervene in to apply intentionality, in other words, to thought more. And it's not that we don't apply any intentionality to thought. Well, lots of times we'll be like, oh, I need to think about this, right? Or when, if you're practicing, it was like, I'm going to do some loving kindness meditation, and you intentionally start repeating phrases. Or, when you structure your meditation, there might be ways that you are, oh, I'm intentionally going to say in out with my breath or whatever. But most of our thinking is much less intentional than that. And when we start, if we can start to capture the intentionality behind thoughts, we can direct them in a more wholesome way. And this is in the Sutta Majjhima Nikaya number 20, called the Removal of Distracting Thoughts. At the end of the sutta, in the sutta, the Buddha goes through five strategies for, quote, removing distracting thoughts. And at the end of the sutta, he has this great phrase where he says, "One who practices in this way becomes the master of the courses of thought." And when I, hear that or read that or reflect on that phrase, it's a very inspiring idea, being the master of the courses of thought. Strictly speaking, being the master of the courses of thought is not the goal of Buddhist practice, but we can see that it is definitely one of the signposts along the way, one of the goals, plural, of practice, that if we become the master of the courses of thought, that's going to, tend to lead us toward, fulfilling the seven factors of awakening and abandoning the unwholesome and having this breakthrough of consciousness creates much more the potential for the breakthrough of consciousness called enlightenment or nibbana. So, there were a lot of things I could have talked about today, as there always are. And I've got a lot of negative things on my mind right now. So I just kind of thought I would pull out some deep dharma, because, the dharma, it's a huge gift, I will say, and in my life to be in a role where I get to just talk about the Dharma, because talking about the Dharma is very healing, as hopefully listening to the Dharma is healing. But it's just so interesting when we're caught up, or when I am caught up in myself issues, to talk about the Dharma, because the Dharma is inherently not about self. And it's a great reminder and way of stepping out of self concerns and what does Ajahn Sumedho, self view, sakkhya-ditthi, I believe is the term. And so hope that's not just a, too wild an idea, but to reflect on, I'll bring this down to what I think, what I think is core, the core importance of this talk, and that is seeing intentionality behind thought, and seeing how you can perhaps start to discover that and guide thought in wholesome directions. Well, actually, I can say one or two more things about that, because by saying that, I kind of open up this that is guiding the thoughts into more wholesome directions is a lot of the purpose of a lot of the practical aspects of Dharma. Certainly, practicing loving kindness and compassion, sympathetic joy and equanimity, the Brahmaviharas, is a way of training the mind to think in wholesome ways and to reflect in wholesome ways. When we look at the four foundations of mindfulness, and the Mindfulness of Breathing Sutta, those two famous suttas, both of them end their fourth, area of attention. Both of them are just on Dharma. And I've always, the way I've, the term I've used for what that practice means in larger sense is viewing things through the lens of Dharma rather than through the lens of self. So what if we become, if we develop the habit of looking at the world, looking at our experience, looking at ourselves, looking at our minds, looking at others, looking at everything through the lens of Dharma rather than through the lens of self, meaning through our biased or conditioned or habitual ways of seeing things, then we are starting to get our minds to be driven by wholesome and wise intention. So our thinking becomes more, it's like reverse engineering the thinking, where though we, if we can't go into the preverbal thoughts, we can, with verbal thoughts, condition the habits of thinking, so that that will then hopefully, reverse engineer, as I say, kind of go back, so that the pre-verbal thoughts then become sanitized as well, if you will. And so a lot of our practice, trying to be mindful, trying to be present, trying to be loving, trying to, practicing gratitude, having a gratitude list, whatever reflection, all of this is ways of training our minds so that they, so we have the intention to train our mind to be more wholesome. And that's, developing this more habitual, positive, wholesome patterns of thought. So that if we can't, as I say, go back into the preverbal and see that and catch the moment of a being about to think and redirect it with intentionality, we can sort of create these new habit patterns in the conscious mind. So I hope that makes sense. It makes sense to me. So that's all I can do. So I appreciate you guys listening, and I hope that's of some value this morning. And I will say that I'm going to have to depart quickly upon the top of the hour. If you listen to radio enough, you realize the top of the hour is like 11 o'clock, and the bottom of the hour, it's like the clock, they use like a clock, like, oh, 11:30 would be the bottom of the hour. Okay, sorry, that's just annoying. But Gabrielle, go ahead. And by the way, Gabrielle, thank you so much for your kind offering of Donna to me. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. And thank you for this great talk. I think it's really, really important on so many levels. But what kept coming back to me was thoughts and intentionality and how it relates to addiction.
Yeah.
And how, if only I had known this a little bit earlier, it might have been able to help me, if to understand that these things are just thoughts. Have a drink, have a drink, have a drink. Another line, whatever. And I was wondering if you wanted to tie that in a little bit. Thanks again.
Well, thank you. And I do, for me, I think I've definitely been drifting away from sort of thinking of Dharma and recovery as separate things, and I'm just sort of absorbed in Dharma. And yes, it always ties to addiction, right? Like the conditioning, the addictive conditioning infiltrates those preverbal cravings, and intentions. So, all part of the healing process. And again, with recovery, certainly in the 12-step model, we reverse engineer this. We just show up, and even though we still have these strong intentions to use and strong addictive intentions, we have another intention, a wholesome intention to not use, and we simply just do the things, right? What it's the phrase, we change the right action leading to right thought. So it's backwards from how Buddhism views it, but it's actually accomplishing the same thing. Change your behavior, and the behavior starts to change the thinking. Yeah. Thank you. Other thoughts or reflections, questions? Oh, Mike. Hi. And speaking of Mike, he's invited me to be on Zoom with the Dharma Bums down in San Diego. I wish I was going to be in person, but that's what, April 5th, I think, something like that.
Yeah, it's on Easter, and thanks for
Easter,
agreeing to
that's
come.
right.
It's an open meeting too. If anyone else wants to join us, you can just find the link on our Dharma Bum Temple webpage. So thanks, Kevin.
DBT, which is interesting. Anyway.
Yeah, DBT. But yeah, thanks for the talk. And I was thinking about this kind of the humans before language. You're right. We were totally just as smart, and we were capable of goal-driven behavior, right? I mean, we've seen kids grow up on their own in the jungles recently, and they're found and adopted and brought into society, and they're on their own and they're doing just fine, then they have no language. So we have, it's funny to think about that we have this whole thing running in here without language, but I only recognize the language thoughts, but there's a lot going on back there. And so when you were talking about we don't recognize our own intentions a lot, I was thinking back to when I was drinking and using. I think that was, a big problem. I didn't see what was going on. And, to kind of bring it all home, I was going through this whole really frustrating week last week. And to top it off, I had a whole thing with my internet provider, and I got a new cable modem, and I spent like 8 hours going through all the hoops to get it to work. It was horrible. And at the end of the day, I'm just kind of sitting there, and I got it all to work. No thanks to Spectrum. And I just got this thought in my head. It was more than a thought. It was the thought occurred, but there was a whole goal-driven intention behind it, which was, boy, Sculpin beer would taste really good right now. And I'm a couple thousand days into sobriety, and I hadn't had anything so powerful for a while. And I just kind of blew it off, like, yeah, that's a good idea. And then a little later, it kind of comes back, and it just kind of pops back in. Oh, that would taste so good, and it did that a few times, and it was really kind of unsettling. But at least I felt like this time I was able to see kind of a little more what was going on in my mind. See the intentionality. It's like these thoughts are happening, and I don't like them or want them. But if I can just kind of give them a little space and not engage it, they just kind of work themselves out. And so, it wasn't a big problem. It was just kind of surprising how strong they were. But they were this kind of nonverbal thing, and they just hit really hard,
Yeah, thanks. I mean, that's a great example of how that happens, that these underlying cravings and underlying, I mean, the Buddha has that, uses that language, the for greed, hatred, and delusion as these, underlying qualities that we have. I mean, our practice is, working to uproot that and to transform those underlying habits into wholesome ones. And, the starting point, the tool we have is mindfulness to see them, just like you said, like to see them when they appear in consciousness. We have to train ourselves, because those energies are very powerful, they don't ask our permission, they don't require logic, they just are like waves of energy that come up, and unless we've built up some, I don't really like the word defense, but some, alternative, belief and commitment, that they'll just sweep us away. I mean, this is the way most of the world operates. It's how we get into wars, thankfully, just to land on a happy note. It's just the those unexamined habits, and indeed, society and particularly economics celebrates greed, particularly. And, lots of institutions and ideologies celebrate hatred. It's not just a simple switch we can flip off, because we are all the inheritors of these forces. It's just like thoughts evolved into language, as a survival technique, right? It gave us more opportunity to survive, because we could do all the things that we can do with language, obviously, communicate. And in the same way, greed, hatred, and delusion have evolutionary purpose as well. And that's what creates a special challenge of turning away from them. It takes us to the kind of to the brink of the Buddha's purpose, which is to stop creating self. And the thing is, when you stop creating self, you actually stop creating humans. And that's a problem for evolution. So why it's a against the stream, as that's said. So I appreciate you guys showing up. I plan to be here again next week, as I plan to be here each week. One never knows. I hope to see you all then. And I don't think I'm doing any other public events between, well, tonight I'll be in Napa, if anybody's in the area. The Napa Valley Insight Group, a lovely community up there. Really great to be able to go up and visit them. I haven't been there for a while. So if I don't see you there, hopefully I will see you here again next Tuesday. All my
Thank you, Kevin.
blessings. Thanks. Somebody has
Thanks,
just
Kevin.
entered the waiting room. How interesting. Better late than never. All right. Take care, everybody.